I was in prison, and you came to visit me. With these words, Christ challenges each of us to spend time serving those who, because of circumstance or bad choices, can't serve themselves. Welcome to Someone Cares, a faith ministry dedicated to helping us all answer that challenge. For many years, this outreach program has carried healing doses of hope and Christian love behind prison walls and touched the lives of those in desperate need of both. I'm your Someone Cares radio host, Charles Mills. Prisons are filled with stories, stories of misguided lives, evil acts, and shattered dreams. But one thing should never be forgotten. Prisons are filled with people, children of God who have wandered far away from Him. That's the tragedy of sin. But there's also triumph to be found behind bars. No one knows this better than our guests today. Brian Hamilton is the Chief Financial Officer at the Three Angels Broadcasting Network in Illinois, and he's joined by his wife, Diane. They have a story to tell, and I've asked them to share their heart with us. Brian and Diane, welcome to Someone Cares.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I will now ask you what I know to be a very loaded question. What got you two interested in prison ministries?
Well, I guess it happened about 7 years ago, 8 years ago. We had a tragedy occur in our family, and I kind of liken it to a defining moment. People have defining moments in their lives where something happens and life changes and it's never the same again. And that's what happened to us. Our son was involved in a very tragic event that ended up in someone losing their life. We found ourselves thrown into a whole new world that we knew nothing about and had had no prior exposure to, and that's the judicial system, jails, prisons, courts. So that's what first introduced us to the likelihood of a long time in prison for our son. And so that's where our journey began.
Diane, when this happened, what was your initial response? Was it disbelief? Was it anger? How did you deal with this tragedy that happened in your family?
Well, the person that called, I kept saying, "Are you sure? Are you sure that that's what happened?" And he kept saying yes. And all along, we couldn't believe it. It just was not our son. So you're just kind of in shock and go through the motions of doing what you have to do, getting an air flight ticket and going out and trying to find where he is and then being told you can't see him for another day and et cetera, et cetera. It's still, every now and then when you think about it, you think, really, did this happen? He hadn't been in drugs, he hadn't been a bad kid, he hadn't been involved with the law, and so it was just really devastating. And of course, we knew the people that it happened to, and so we felt really bad about that, and they were thrown into something that our son did and reaped the results of whatever happened there, and so it was difficult to wrap your mind around it.
Now, Brian, when you sat down with your son that next day and you started asking questions, what's the first question you asked him? What did you need to know at that point?
We weren't necessarily needing to know anything. In fact, we were cautioned not to ask any questions because everything is recorded.
Right.
When you're in a county jail, you're on a phone, he's behind glass, you know, and our desire was to let him know that we loved him, that we cared, and that he was loved, and we were concerned for him. At the end of that first conversation, he apologized to us for putting us through what we were going through, and that he let us know that he was going to change his life, and that he was giving his life over to the Lord. And he's kept that promise ever since.
When was it, Brian and Diane, that you looked around at these rather stark surroundings of first the county jail and then later the prison system and said, you know, I need to do more. I need to do more than come and visit my son here. What was the motivation behind that, and when did it happen?
Well, we immediately, the first time we went to the jail, it's not user-friendly.
No.
And you have to kind of muddle your way through. They could care less that you're there to visit your criminal son. Mm. There's, of course, you know, maybe 50 other people there in the room waiting for their visit as well, and so you kind of feel your way through. The next day, then you begin seeing other people coming in that they don't know what to do either. So we immediately started seeing the need of those that are in grief and trying to visit loved ones and don't know how to do it. And so that was the start right there at the county jail. Wow. By day two, probably.
Wow. Yeah, there was a couple. They were a little bit older than us. Found out that it was their only son, and he was in the same unit that our son was in. And because he was in the same unit, it was sort of a maximum security unit. We knew his situation was as grave as our son's was. And this couple were in shock and grief like we were the day or two before, and still were.
Yes.
But we saw their bewilderment and not knowing how to navigate the system, so we kind of took them under our wing and walked them over to where they needed to go and through the process of security and which line to stand in and when to stand in it and where to go next. And then we went down together and had our visit with our sons at the same time.
Oh,
and that opened our eyes to, you know, the grief that is present in a situation like that. There's wives or husbands, there's mothers and fathers, there's brothers and sisters, there's children or grandchildren experiencing the loss that comes with the separation of being in a jail and eventually in prison. And so that opened our eyes to a whole world of need that we had never really even thought about or seen before. When we got back to 3ABN, one of the things that we determined to do is not be secretive about this. We were going to be open with our work family and our immediate family. We were not going to be silent. We were going to share ourselves and our story and our experience. And that really made it easier for other people to minister to us.
Hmm.
When we're open and willing to talk and to share, then other people come and minister to you that wouldn't know how to do it otherwise, you know, and that was a blessing to us. And when we got back to 3ABN, one of the employees was involved in prison ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited me first to get involved in the local prison not too far from where 3ABN is located. And eventually I went through the whole background check system. It takes a little while. And started going to services with him. And that was a whole new experience. And then later, as I felt comfortable with it and felt it was safe, then Diane joined me. And today we serve in three different prisons in our area.
Now, when you say you serve, what is it exactly that you do when you go to that prison?
We have weekly services in two prisons, mm-hmm. One federal, and another one is a state prison, and then a third prison we have twice a month. We have anywhere from an hour to a two-hour time mm-hmm. in the prison conducting Bible study service.
Diane, as the years have gone by and as you've realized your ministry, what have you discovered works best for the prisoners and for the people serving the prisoners? What subject matter do you talk about? How do you approach the fact that here are people behind bars and you're not? How do you deal with that?
Well, for me, just the men appreciate somebody coming in. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't particularly lead out with, any of the Bible studies and things, I do some of the other, like, roll call, and we have the Sabbath school lesson that we go through, and those that wish to receive a certificate of completion, then I check their books. But more important than that is so many of these men are like little boys that have never had love. They've never had parents that loved them. And you see that in their faces, and just us coming religiously every week, rain or shine or whatever, they know we're going to be there, and they so much appreciate it. And there are some that have said, "You're the only family I have." Wow. And we really can't interact with them a whole lot because there's not enough time. It's a large group. You know, it's just shaking their hand when they come in, shaking their hand when they leave, just a little bit of a physical touch, and knowing that somebody cares for them and loves them. And you don't have to tell them that particularly. They just can see it. For us, it's like we minister to these men, and it's like we're ministering to our son. And we're hoping that somebody over in California is ministering to our son. And there is. It's just wonderful. It's not always Seventh-day Adventist ministering. It are other denominations that come in and minister. And it is so much appreciated by the guys. Just to have somebody from the outside care enough to take time out of their week, every week, to come in and care about them.
Brian, I'm going to ask you a very personal question. I'm only giving you about 60 seconds to answer this as the last question here. You've probably done a lot of soul searching, both you and Diane, about your son. What was missing? He came from a home of love. He came from a Christian home. But what would allow him to make this huge mistake that ended up putting him in prison? What was missing in his life that you know about now, and what would you have changed, if anything?
He had some struggles, particularly academically, had fairly low self-esteem. We tried to help him with that. Mm-hmm. And he abandoned his walk with God, and that put him on the enemy's ground, and the enemy took advantage of him at a weak moment in time, and a moment of depression. So that's what went wrong. How we could have done anything different, I don't know. I really don't know. We tried all that we could.
Yes.
But the Lord restored him, and he's walking in a better walk, in a more positive life now than he did before, which is amazing, being in prison. But that's how the Lord takes tragedy and brings triumph out of it.
Amen. Amen to that. Well, Brian and Diane Hamilton from Three Angels Broadcasting Network, thank you so much for sharing your heart today. I know this wasn't easy, but I really appreciate that. I think you helped some people today. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Brian and Diane Hamilton reminding you that someone cares. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening to Someone Cares. If you'd like to become part of this vital prison outreach ministry, visit someonecares.org and discover ways you can safely and effectively touch the lives of incarcerated men and women with God's love. Again, that web address is someonecares.org. This program was produced by Lifetalk Radio.